Welcome to the Ugly Podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Alexander, she, they, and this is the place where creatives are encouraged to make messy, ugly art and let go of perfectionism. I started this podcast with my creative partner, Emerson, and we've since grown into our businesses, and this podcast is now evolving into a space where I interview other creatives to discuss our creative processes and how we navigate the mental minefield of creativity. This podcast serves as a reminder that you and your art get to be whatever the hell you want to be, ugly and all. Welcome back to the Ugly Podcast. Thank you to my listeners who keep coming back. I really appreciate you to just be here to talk about all of the messy things that come along with creativity. Today, we're going to kind of focus on imposter syndrome. And I have an amazing guest here for you. She is the founder and editor-in-chief of Indie It Press, a platform for indie artists who struggle with imposter syndrome. They offer support to help artists of all mediums to set aside that nagging inner monologue in order to succeed and continue to flourish in their artistic endeavors. She has written a memoir and is currently working on an epic historical fiction work. Welcome, Lisa Green. Can you please share your pronouns with us?
Yes, my pronouns are she, her.
Thank you so much. So welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to finally have you on. As soon as I read, you know, everything that you've been doing with imposter syndrome, I'd been wanting to talk about imposter syndrome for a while. And I was like, I have to get Lisa on here. So thank you.
The biggest imposter ever. Here I am.
Great way to start.
You're welcome. If I can do it, you can do it too.
I love it. So tell me a bit about your creative life before you started Indie It Press. How had your relationship to creativity evolved through the years?
Well, I was never told I was a creative person. I was never told I was a smart person. I came from a generation where women were just starting to go out into the workforce and the kids were latchkey kids. There you go. And it wasn't like anything that was encouraged in my family. However, I found theater when I was a sophomore in high school, and I loved it. And I loved, taking special interest literature classes in high school. And I think probably theater is where it began for me, for sure. And it's not that I do theater now. As an adult, I have. But being involved in something so collaborative and creative, and you get to be somebody you're not. Mm-hmm. And that's where it began for me, I think. As far as writing, I'm an imposter because I kept, when I was like 10, the journal of all the people I liked, you know, in the journal, mm-hmm. and my little secrets with the little lock. But that was pretty much it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't write a lot. I enjoyed my lit classes. I didn't even think about being a writer. Never even crossed my mind. Didn't think I was qualified to write. Didn't think, it never occurred to me. It never mm-hmm. occurred to me that was something that I could do. And it wasn't until I, changed my life drastically as an adult there's a lot of things with that, and that's a whole other story. And that's what's part of my memoir is, but until I completely like flipped my world upside down and went back to university, that I was told I had an ability to write specifically about my ex-husband in a way that was a wider lens than most people do, and that I had a talent. Mm. And at that time, I was 41 years old. And I remember I had just turned in an essay piece. It was in the summer. I was taking summer school because I wanted to get done in a specific time with university. I was a literature major. Was not a creative writing major until after this point. And I had met with the instructor, and when he told me these things, he's like, Lisa, you are a writer. He said, this is really good. And remember going with my family and my now husband and hiking up the M and going, he said I was a writer. And I wrote on that, and I'm not kidding you, for like 2 weeks.
Oh, I bet. Like,
my mind was blown. And so that was when I began the process of going, maybe I really like doing this. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed doing it. Nobody ever told me I could do it. Nobody ever said, Lisa, you can't do this. But nobody ever said, yeah, you should do that. And my world was very closed, like in my 20s and 30s. And I was raising kids and my life was very different. It was very religious oriented. And so when I flipped everything around and I started looking at these different things, and suddenly I'm realizing, hey, I can do this. And there were a lot of bumps. I was really green. I'm still really green at it. Honestly, when you think about that, I'm still rather new. It took me 11 years to write the memoir. So I battle in my head all the time because I hear people say, I was a writer when I was 7. I started writing when I was 10. I started writing. Boy, you know, that words were my favorite thing. Okay. I liked words. And obviously it was the first word that I said, according to my mother. I don't believe that's true, but, but I liked words. I enjoyed words. I enjoyed film. I enjoyed storytelling. Poetry and all sorts of things. I enjoyed them as a consumer, as a watcher, and you know, also theater in the acting part of it. But I enjoyed reading. I read voraciously for years when I was raising my kids. But until that point, I never thought I should pick up a pen and write. And all it took was one person to say, "Hey, have you thought about this?"
Yeah.
I haven't. But now I'm going to think about it every day now for the rest of my life for the last, how many years has that been? Over 15 years now. Thank you, Robert Stubblefield.
Thank you, Robert.
Yeah. Totally changed my life.
Yeah. With writing, there are people who, yes, I wanted to write from the time I came out of the womb. And then there's other people, I think I fall in the same camp as you, where no one told me I could do that. In fact, I had one teacher tell me, you shouldn't, this is bad, which obviously set me back a bit. But it didn't occur to me to continue pursuing writing because there was just like, I thought writers were people who had book deals already. I didn't see the path to becoming a writer, so it just didn't occur to me. And I think that happens to a lot of writers, even though everybody has something that they want to share, but we just don't think of putting it on paper unless it's a specific, we have like a specific goal or we're viewing it through a specific lens.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people that started at a very young age were probably encouraged by people. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's be real. We all come from different families and different backgrounds and different levels of education and different things that are valued differently. And I think because it wasn't that it was not valued, it was just not in my family's purview of anything. And I was a really good follower. Mm-hmm. I was a really good follower and not a leader. And I didn't do, and this is really hard to say, I didn't do a lot of thinking for a while for myself. And it allowed me to do when I began to go to school as obviously a non-trad student. And learn all these different things, even though I was a voracious reader. I never really talked to people about the books. I never got involved like that. And I think going to school really like opened up getting an education and a liberal arts education, an English degree that isn't going to get you anywhere, right? But it taught me so much about the world that I had lived in this glass bubble, and suddenly everything really opened up to me, if that makes sense. Maybe I'm getting a little off track here on something, but I began to start thinking for myself in different ways and having some confidence in my thoughts, even though the younger generations that were just coming out of high school and into college, whip smart, would come up with all these things, especially when it came to like literature theory and things like that. And I'm like, I am never going to keep up. I'm never going to get this. And yet there were so many things I learned that in my very conservative bubble, let's just call it for what it was, my conservative bubble, I didn't feel like I could look at things in a different way. And it drastically changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
But then also it brought on this imposter syndrome of who do you think you are? Because people have been doing this since they were 7 or 10 or 15 or 16. Or this guy that lived up the Bitterroot here, you know, he was 16 years old and he wrote this book called Aragon, and suddenly it gets picked up by one of the big 5 and it gets sold like crazy and he gets a movie made, you know, and yada, yada, yada.
Right.
Who am I?
Mm-hmm.
I am now this 50-something year old that still writes, still tries, still makes an effort, and fights every day what my brain is telling me.
Mm.
Yeah. And I'm sure he does too. Yeah. And that's the beauty of imposter syndrome, is I started doing some research into it because it kind of became this buzzword. Everybody's suffering with imposter syndrome, right?
Yeah.
And it became this buzzword. It literally was a buzzword. And I was like, well, wait a minute, what all does that mean? What does this really mean? And as I started looking it up, it's like actresses and actors and famous like writers and musicians and, you know, people who have really attained a lot of success in whatever creative business they're in, because let's be honest, it's all a business. They've had this amount of a success. They still struggle with imposter syndrome. And it's like, it's a real thing.
Yes, absolutely.
I believe in it.
Yeah. It's hard not to believe in it when you experience it every day.
Exactly. And so the reason I took this very big interest in it, in not only in my writing, but with India Press, is because so many people suffer from it. And art is really important. I don't even know how to express the importance of art in my life. I can't express the importance of art and the importance of education and being able to learn things, because life is about learning and life is about experiencing new experiences and life is about, you know, shifting it up a little and shaking it up a little bit and getting excited and, you know, realizing, oh, maybe I was wrong about that. Or, hey, you know, wow, there's real beauty in putting a string of words together. And so for me to, like, I'm trying to figure out how to, like, articulate this to get it to your listeners, is that, yes, imposter syndrome is there. But because I started digging into what it was, it opened up all these things that made me realize, number one, I'm not alone. Number two, people can all relate to this, no matter who you are, no matter what circumstances you came under, or, you know, you're your life's trajectory or whatever. Number three, that art in and of itself can actually invoke and create change in this world.
Yes.
And so it wasn't until I started really diving into this, why am I feeling this way? Why am I struggling so much to write this memoir? Why am I fighting everything? That I began to realize, oh, there's beauty in sharing the fact that we all do this. Mm-hmm. And you're not unusual in that way. And we can support each other. And why not?
Yes. And so that is where the birth of Indiot Press came in, I take it?
Well, funny thing, no.
Okay.
Actually, Indiot Press was started 10 years prior to 2021. I decided, so in my quest for knowledge, I was like, I want to build a website. Literally, that's what I was. And I thought, and I want to like support indie authors and indie musicians and indie like fine artists and all that started 10 years ago. So I was still at university at the time. Well, it was longer than that ago. I was ending up university, let's put it that way. And I had a writer friend and my son and kind of like had this idea of promoting indie artists because at the time, locally here, I was writing for an online e-zine, music like pieces about musicians here in town. And we had like a open mic nights and things like that. And I was writing about things with the inside the indie music scene. Mm-hmm. And I was a little bit frustrated with the attitude of self-published authors and indie artists in general. And so I built the website. I taught myself how to do it. I a lot of YouTube and, you know, learning these nice little like tools we have nowadays that we didn't have 20 years prior. And I started utilizing those. And so I just started featuring, you know, self-published authors and indie musicians and what the online e-zine wouldn't pick up in regards to my pieces, I put on my website. I started writing about fine artists and mostly the ones that I knew around here because I hadn't reached out too much in like the social media world. The only thing at that point, I think, was Facebook maybe that I was doing. I began Twitter a little bit after that and met some artists that way as well. And I just like was really fascinated by the artist indie life. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the start of Indiot Press. And then what happened was, is life happened. I started working for university and I got really busy and I wanted to keep doing my writing and the website kind of fell away. And it wasn't until COVID hit that I was like, I should reboot this. Mm. I should like rebrand it, reboot it, and give it some real life. And so in 2020, that's when I decided to make it more of a direct a community for indie artists to discuss things like imposter syndrome, get some kind of educational knowledge, publish their work because it's really hard. There are a lot of gatekeepers.
Yeah.
And I want to rip down the gates. So I'm ripping down the gates with my own thing and I'm publishing people that way. And so that's kind of how the birth of what is now the iteration of Indiot Press happened, because technically it was just a platform before to just like feature them. And now I was actually publishing their pieces and mm-hmm. putting together an anthology and helping them with education and giving a space where we could do some readings or have conversations about imposter syndrome or how to self-publish and, you know, just give something, some resources and some community. And that's how this iteration of Indiot Press happened.
I love it. I love how it's evolved. That's just so cool.
It's interesting how, yeah, because people didn't, I mean, there for a while, I was getting quite a few hits, like about year two, when I first started it, I was starting to gain some momentum, but that was when my life was like, really began to shift quite a bit. And, you know, I just rolled with the shift and my focus was elsewhere, and that's okay. And I think sometimes when things happen or drastic things have happened, like 2020, right, you know, we kind of like reevaluate what's important, what's not important, what can we let go, what do we want to like pursue, what our real passions are. I think a lot of people have been thinking about that. But then at the same time, our brains tell us, oh, I'm not good as so-and-so, or I haven't been doing this for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. You know? Exactly. So yeah, let's shift that. So centering on imposter syndrome, how does it show up in your own life? What is it? How does it make you react? Where do you notice it the most?
Okay. I notice it every day in some form or another. And I don't think I'm unusual with other artists and writers, and I'm going to call myself an artist and writer, which is also new language for me. Mm-hmm. I am a writer. I am an author. I am a supporter of other artists. And I think for me every day, it's in my head talk. It's what mm-hmm. I tell myself. It's not as much as in comparison as into, and this sounds just yucky to me, but worthiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that stems from my background as a kid and what people see as being worthy of or not worthy of. Like that's even a thing. Come on.
Right. Right.
I don't, it's not, that's me. And mm-hmm. that's me fighting against the old dogma or the things that were in my head and have been in my head for a lot of years. And what I've noticed has happened, and I go through these ebbs and flows, I think like everybody does, is I will have times where I'm like, go, right, tick, right? I'm like, I am on fire, right? And then there are times I am like, what do I do? I have no words.
Yep.
None. It's just not coming. And I've done that with the memoir. I've done that with this historical fiction piece. I have done that with other small short pieces I've written, where there are times like things will just spill out of me like lava. It's just like it's erupting and there we are. It's all over the ground and there it is. And there are times where it's like, okay, we're going to put rocks down in that shaft and we're going to make sure nothing comes up. And I think it's those times where those big boulders are sitting inside my like nice little volcano.
Volcano.
Yep. And Lisa's in there going, okay, I want to come up. But those rocks seem heavier and heavier and heavier. Mm-hmm. Those rocks could maybe be day job, relationships, illness, taking care of elderly parents, life stuff that gets you, you know, distracted away from your art, right? And there's mm-hmm. all of these things that press down on you. And that lava isn't free to flow. That creativity isn't free to flow. And then I don't know that I believe in like writer's block. I believe we have moments in our lives where it just flows. It just comes. You can get in that zone and it's easier. And there are times in my life, I'm not going to say everybody's life, but in my life where there are more responsibilities. There is more things going on that require my attention. And yes, as much as I like prioritize myself and all of that, there is still stuff that can weigh very heavily, like those boulders inside, you know, just pushing down. And you got to kind of work through that.
Mm-hmm.
At least I do. I got to work through that before I can get to that point again of feeling that creative flow and release. And mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly what your question was.
No, I
got so caught in from my analogy. I'm like, what did she ask me again?
So how does imposter syndrome show up in your life? And I like what you're saying about like feeling like it's a volcano and things are like piling up. And then once you have all that stuff piling up, imposter syndrome is the thing that like keeps you from breaking through. Imposter syndrome says, no, see all these things? No, that's you. You don't have any right to break through this and get to the writing that you really want to do.
And get to the point where yes. you're writing again and yeah, doing and like, that again. And it's a lie because you yeah. can.
Yeah. And look yeah. at all these things that it's are getting like, in your way. If you were a real writer, these things wouldn't get in your way.
Yeah, exactly. And who are you to think that, you know, it's just going to come all the time anyway. It's going to flow mm-hmm. all the time. And I do believe that we have this kind of like, there's a cyclical part of it for me. Sometimes it falls in with the seasons, which might sound super kooky, but I know certain seasons affect me more than other seasons. I've known this same. For yeah. quite some time now, for a lot of years before mm-hmm. I even decided to write. And so some of my most productive, this is so strange, some of my most productive times can be in the fall, which also is some of my most hardest times are in the fall. Mm. Some of my least productive times is in the summer, which is usually pretty easygoing for me.
Well, that's so the time strange. You want to be outside. You want to be relaxing, you know.
Yeah. Get me to the lake or to the river or right. to the mountains or to the beach or wherever, right? I don't know. But I don't know if I'll be battling imposter syndrome forever. I don't know that when I publish this epic, and it's epic, historical fiction piece, and I believe it's epic, which is even better because I don't believe my memoir is epic. I don't even think my memoir is that great. But this, I really feel like I really have something here. And so I believe it will be published. And when it's published and everybody knows me and I have all that, will I be the one saying, yeah, I still struggle with imposter syndrome? Yep, I would be that person. If I never got published, it, you know, in a large manner and I self-published, would I still feel like that imposter? Yes, I think I would. And I think that those mindsets that we change take some serious like cracking through all of that to get to the why. Why do we feel like this way? Why do we feel like maybe people would call it a crutch, something we hang on to, maybe as artists. I don't know. Do I want that crutch? No, I don't think any of us do. But I think there's some kind of solidarity in knowing that I'm not the only one that feels this way. And there are people in their 50s and 60s, and even, yes, 70, that were first-time debut authors. Mm-hmm. And it happens, and it can happen. And I got to stop telling myself I'm too old. I have way too many other responsibilities. We're taking care of elderly parents on both sides of my husband's side and my side, you know, things like that, all of these things that can keep you from doing what you love. And what I figured out more than anything is that art in my life is what I love. I love consuming it as much as I love doing it. And if I'm doing that to some degree every day, no matter what that might look like, even if it's a little bit or if it's a lot, then I'm winning because it's... art and education have enriched my life like nothing ever has. And that's even, ooh, my poor family. That would be even over relationships to some degree. Mm. I'm not saying my kids. I'm like, okay, kids will listen. My kids will listen to this. I don't mean that. But I mean, this is for me.
Mm-hmm.
This is for me. And why would I let imposter syndrome or the fear of or whatever stop me from doing this? Because it's a pure joy
mm-hmm.
that comes from me. And when I consume art, I see it the way Lisa sees it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I see it differently from the way Laura sees it, Lauren sees it, or my son sees it, or my husband. And I can have a conversation about it, and we can have like those fun little arguments, or we can get super excited and find those same threads that is humanity. And I think those threads over the last few years have gotten broken in our society.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, for me, art is giving in life. Mm-hmm. And so to let something like imposter syndrome stop me from doing what really brings me joy is something I can't do. I can't let it happen. So I fight it. I try to defeat it.
That feeling you describe of how art empowers you so and just brings you to life, that is exactly what I have experienced in these past 2 years of doing this, of getting back in touch with my creativity. It feels like an opening of myself and like getting back in touch with my childhood self, my teenage self. All of me just seems so much more open up and excited and curious about life. And that is because of art and following my creative spirit and actually letting myself explore what there is. And there's so much power there in our creativity. And so thank you so much for touching on that.
Tons of power and creativity. It also is like, I don't know. There are times when I write something, and I don't know if you're the same, Lauren, but when I write something, I'll be like, dang, I really wrote that. And then if I read it out loud to my family, and okay, they got to say it's good. You know,
that's the rule.
But I will read it to my husband, and there was something I wrote in my work in progress in my historical fiction piece. And he said, I got done writing it, and I was just like, in this moment of, wow. So I said, can I read this to you? Right? I want to read this to you because, well, just let me read it to you. And so I read it to him. And he said, did you just write that? I said, I did. He said, Lisa, that is really good. And I'm like, I know, right?
That is the best feeling.
Yeah. Mind you, that doesn't happen all the time. But every once in a while, you get that beautiful moment where you're like, okay, that was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And even if, you know, beta readers read it and a handful of people buy the book and those other, like half of that handful actually reads the book and it's not just sitting in their bookshelf, they're going to read that. And they might go, wow, I really resonate with that. Or wow, that like, what a beautiful whatever. Or wow, that really changes my perception on whatever this is. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And then there's moments where it's like, yeah, so that like dialogue that I just wrote really sounds jilted and not real.
Yep, yep. Yeah. And you have to be willing. Yeah. And you have to be willing to walk through those yucky parts in order to get to those juicy, like, yes moments.
Juicy yes moments. And boy, do they come. And when they come, it's like, I don't know, a whole choir singing or something. I know, it's like, oh, here I am. And then suddenly you go on to the next thing and you're like, whoa, wait, okay. It can all be fixed, right?
Yes.
I think the other thing, going back to like kind of what I struggle with, like how I see it show up in my daily life, this imposter syndrome jerk, is that I don't know. I feel like when I don't have those really beautiful, like, oh, I wrote this or I did these moments, and it like I have longer stretches of that. I think that's when I tell myself I'm not really a writer. I'm not, when I find that break between those really beautiful, like, oh, this is really gorgeous, to, wow, I'm really struggling to even to pull two or three sentences together, or write a scene of dialogue. And I think those longer stretches I have between those moments make it a little harder. But the reality is every time I sit down to write, or I continue to do so, meaning regularly, then you get those moments again. Mm-hmm. And it's just that nice little sweet spot. And it's like, yeah, that's why I do this. I love feeling that little sweet spot and go, yes, wow, that came from me. I created that. No AI created that. No bot. Mm-hmm. No, like, you know, anybody, not my children that I birthed, but I actually created this myself. Mm-hmm. And you get those moments again. And I think we forget that it's not like going to be that singing beautiful moment every time. Mm-hmm. I don't think with anybody. And so I try to remember that this is just part of the process.
Yep.
And it's hard to remember, it's just part of the process. And also, I don't know about you, but I spend a lot of time thinking about things before I actually write them down. Mm. I'll think about characters, and I'll think about circumstances, and I'll build thoughts inside my head before I ever like take pen to paper. And I will usually like handwrite, like I'll like do a handwrite, like a general like outline of maybe 1 to 10 chapters or something, just general. And I'm not like really plotting the whole thing. But once I like get it down and start building that on paper, then it kind of builds on top of itself. And then I can like, that's when I can sit down and really like produce stuff. Mm. And I'm not the person who writes every single day steadily. I get up at, I'm not a 5 a.m. like person. I don't do it at 8 a.m. I don't do it every day after work at 6 p.m. I'm not like that. Mm-hmm. What I notice with me, and I know people are all different, but in my case, I'm like doing a lot of thinking. It germinates while I'm in the shower. It germinates while I'm at my day job. It germinates while, and I'll put things on my phone, or I'll put something in my notebook, or I'll do, you know, whatever I need to do to go, oh yeah, this is a thought. And then if I stop thinking about it, that's when I know I have to do something drastic. Because if I stop thinking about the characters, if they stop talking to me, if I can't visualize the scenes or the scenarios or whatever, then I'm like, okay, I got to do something a little differently. Mm-hmm. And that recently happened to me. And I was like, okay, I got to shake it up. So I shook it up.
How did you shake it up?
I'm not a poet at all. I love poetry, but I've never written poetry. And I've been thinking okay, Lauren, I've been thinking for 2 months about doing something creative, right? 2 months. Blackout poetry is in my head. 2 freaking months. I'm obsessing about blackout poetry. And like, oh, Lisa, you should do that. Lisa, you should, mm-hmm. Lisa, you should really, maybe that would help. Lisa, do that. Lisa, do that. I didn't do it.
Put it off.
Another month goodbye. I didn't do it. One day I woke up and I was like, oh man, okay, today's the day. I got out the glue sticks. I got out the different kinds of words. I got out the cards. I started gluing and slapping it on there and like crossing out what didn't resonate with me and circling those that did. And I found it suddenly got me in a place of creative thought, relaxation, a gentleness in regards to it's okay to get messy. And this isn't something like I'm going to like publish, except maybe on Instagram, which I did do three of them. Right. But
yeah,
that's
I saw a couple of those.
But you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, you just do it for you, right? Mm-hmm. And it felt so good just to do it.
Yeah. Brilliant.
And so I shook it up. And now I'm thinking things again. Mm-hmm. I'm getting to that point again where I'm like, okay, I believe I can write the Hollywood part section of this epic novel. There's only one more other thing I need to do that I think I need to do, which I think is holding me back a little bit, is because I'm writing about a place that is very well written about and seen in movies. And so I want to get it right. And that mm-hmm. stops me sometimes from doing the work because mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, what if I get it wrong?
Yeah.
And then someone like Lauren says, just get messy. Just get messy.
Yep.
It's okay.
Perfectionism and imposter syndrome are very best of friends, and they will work.
They are in love.
They are in a long-term committed relationship, and they live in all of our heads rent-free.
Yep.
Yep, I know it well.
Exactly. And I have to let those, like, that perfectionism part of me go. Mm-hmm. Do you? Yeah, mine stems from my ex-church days and mm-hmm. that you can be perfect type of situation, which is like, so that's old yuck, old Lisa, young Lisa yuck that I'm still like have brought into this like creative life with me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it can't be perfect, and it's okay because there's people out there can help me. There are editors, there are researchers. I could go do some research. I could go just take a look at it and see mm-hmm. what I think. You know, but I got to get it down, right?
Yeah. Knowing that you don't have to go it alone is so impactful in knowing that you are not, in fact, an imposter because you have this team of people around you.
Yeah, definitely.
I would love to know, how have you grown in the past couple of years since reinvigorating Indie It Press?
I've grown through watching other people. There are a number of people that are part of India Press in the community where they had never submitted to anything before. And specifically in like the indie publishing community, because they don't feel like they actually fit in the mold of, because they're not traditionally published, that they want to have this opportunity to be, you know, have their work out there in other ways too. Not meaning that they can't like do it through like lit magazines of course they could. But I've seen a lot of people who have never been published before get published and see their excitement to be published on India Press. I've seen people really grow like exponentially in their art. Like they just started out with us. And now 2 years later, I mean, they've published a book. They're going to be publishing another one. They've gone to DC to do like this big conference of reading. I mean, there's been so many things. So for me, it's helped me to grow in my art to watch and other people succeed and find the confidence that even maybe I lack still. So I think that's where I've grown the most with India Press is watching other people. And, you know, we wish we could like in the contest award everybody, we can't. We wish, you know, we could publish more, we can't. And, you know, there's not many of us and we all are working other jobs and doing other things and doing other creative endeavors. And so it's, you know, it takes time to do things I'm doing, but, you know, we try to do what we can. And I think it's great to watch people really succeed and not only succeed, but just feel that confidence and get that boost because I don't think it's so readily available for people. And so that's been really great part of India Press.
Tell me about your year of creativity goals, all the membership programs and the courses through India Press, the next volume of the Courageous Creative. What do you have going on this year?
So we'll be putting, I work with this gal. She is a self-published author. Her name is Cami Walters Nepali. Super talented individual, and she has been with us basically since the beginning, helping indie authors or authors that want to self-publish or give them the information based on traditional, hybrid, indie. And so we wanted to roll into something because we were charging like 47 per class, and with the country the way it is, and with cost of living, and people really are they're str let's just be honest, because majority of the people are struggling versus those who are actually making it. And so we decided to switch to this membership model, meaning that if you wanted to take this class, this whole like series, you could take it. And it's the membership not only allows you to take the classes, but it allows you to like submit pieces and to get feedback and to like get your first chapter analyzed and sent back to you. So there's other options, and then anything extra we do, you're people are welcome to come. But she put together this really great series, and it's called Putting This Story Together. And she basically takes you from anybody who might be doing a fiction piece or wants to do a nonfiction work. She just starts you out with the elements of literature and the importance of literature. And then each month she'll take you through a thing like deep dive into your character. She has two parts, one and two, finding your why of your characters and finding your voice. Then another lesson, one of the months is using the themes of geography to create your entire world. And then she then will take you to this point of why did you make the choices you made for your story or what you're writing, and then talking about conflicts and how to raise the stakes in your story itself or whatever you're putting together. And then she's going to teach a section on narrative structure, long form and short form. So for those people who write like essays or are in the freelance world and want to maybe up their game in regards to writing the short form of things, she's going to do both of those. And then she's going to do the ending of wrapping it up is putting the whole story together, so drafting and revising and everything. And then she will work one-on-one with people. She's a fantastic person to do this with and to work with. And I think she's published like, oh, Cami, I'm sorry if I get it wrong. I think it's something like 9 or 13 books on her
Wow.
own. She's just highly prolific, really amazing. And she knows what she's doing. And she's also a ghostwriter. So just a fantastic offering by her. And then it allows us to give some real value to, more value to what we're offering each month with India Press. I do. Which this is free. I do a newsletter. I started 24 weeks ago. I made a commitment that I was going to do a weekly newsletter, and it didn't matter. It didn't have to be perfect, Lauren. And it's like if there is a typo or if something is wrong, I'm still going to put out what's going on with me for the week and how I feel about things, or something that's really like prominent in my creative life, or something that affected me. So I just made this commitment to write a newsletter once a week, no matter what. I'm calling it the Indie Beat, and I just write this newsletter based on maybe some really great like a music I experienced, or where I'm getting stuck, or I'm just trying to think what I wrote on for Monday, and it really resonated with people. And what's interesting is I'm getting people actually replying to my newsletters now and saying, "Hey, thanks for writing that, because it was about my not really enjoying like New Year's resolutions and words of the year, and I really fight against that. However, I really feel like I need to have a rebirth this year." And so it's, I suppose my word is rebirth. However, I mean, I'm wanting to pursue to like I really feel like a lot of us are rebuilding each other after the past few years. And I believe I've done that nearly every 7 years anyway of my life. But so it was my word, and it was about how, you know, people, one of the writers that he's written a ton, he has published traditionally in the nonfiction realm. And he emailed me and he's like, this is the first time in years that I don't have a project on the background. I don't know what I'm about. I don't know what I'm doing. But I read your newsletter every week and it makes me think of things, and what you're offering is great. And, you know, that's something. And I know it's making a difference. Mm. And so I've just committed myself, like, if I don't do anything, I'm going to do my blackout poetry and I'm going to write my newsletter. That's it.
I love it.
Everything love else it. Is bonus. Oh, and I am registered as a member and I will be taking Cami's class, by the way.
Nice. Very good. I love it. At the end of every episode of The Ugly Podcast, I like to ask if there was anything ugly that you've made recently. So is there anything ugly you've made recently?
Yes. Okay. So blackout poetry, I was talking about this. Mm-hmm. So I haven't shared some of them, obviously, on Instagram or whatever, because I don't want to, and it's sure. Okay. So, but I'm going to share this with you. And I started doing this blackout poetry, which I've taken like short stories and works that really resonate with me. Some that my work, my historical fiction piece has a lot to do with music and film. And it's still kind of memoir-esque because it's based on my grandfather. Mm. But so I've taken these pieces that really resonate with me, or have, you know, since when I went to the university, or, you know, that I read somewhere, and I put them on these cards. And one that I haven't shared with people, and it's called Fungus.
Ooh, I love it already.
I called the piece Fungus, and it's a piece of blackout poetry. And I don't know that it's considered ugly, but it's like, who wants to share about fungus? I don't know. Maybe that's ugly. Maybe it's very beautiful to people, but it's just interesting what came up, because I thought, okay, it seems kind of dark. It seemed dark to me. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, what kind of mood was I in when I did this? So it's rather ugly, but I'm going to read it to you.
Oh, I love it.
And I think this piece came from the Yellow Wallpaper, possibly. I don't think it was jazz. Toni Morrison's jazz. I can't even remember now where these pieces all came from, because it doesn't matter, because it's not what it's about. So for those who don't know about blackout poetry, is you take these like pieces, these sections of writing, and you pick out the words that really resonate with you, and you block everything else out to kind of make a poem. And so these are the words that I picked out. Sleep, for it is so. Watch development. Tiresome. Perplexing. New fungus. New shades. All over. Cannot count. I have tried. The end.
I love it.
And I don't know how ugly that is, but...
I mean, ugly is a state of mind.
I don't know if I'll share this one or not, Lauren. Yeah, right? Exactly. Apparently it was a state of mind that day, wasn't it? Yeah. I know. Whatever. That's so fine. Good. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. Can you please just share really quick where people can find you and how they can support you and get involved with Indie It Press?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for asking. So, I'm pretty active on Instagram, so you could find me at Indie It Press, and I know that seems like a lot, but I'm going to spell it for you. It's Indie, I-N-D-I-E, I-T, and then Press, P-R-E-S-S. It's at Indie It Press or IndieItPress.com. If you're curious about my creative brain and my author life and my cat Ziggy Stardust and my son's Frenchies, you can follow my author page. It's at Lisa, L-E-I-S-A, underscore green, green with an E on the end. That's perfect. Where you can find me.
So yeah. Good. Thank you so much, Lisa. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you.
Keep it ugly, everybody.
Keeping it ugly. Because that's what we do. That's what we do.
That's what we do. The Ugly Podcast is created by me, Lauren Alexander of Scribe and Sunshine. It is produced and sort of edited, also by me, and written and directed by absolutely nobody. If you like the podcast, be sure to rate and leave a review on your preferred platform and share with the creative people in your life. If you're interested in learning more about what I do, head to scribeandsunshine.com to learn more about my Ugly Art 101 course, my Perfectionism Workshop, my editing services, and the Writer's Helm, which is an online community for writers co-captained by myself and Gabby Goodlow. As always, keep it ugly.